Hello and hi, welcome to another Slice of Sci-Fi. I'm Summer Brooks, and today we're going to talk about the Escape Pod Anthology, the collection, the print collection of science fiction stories that have been featured on Escape Pod over the past 15 years, including some actual new stories. And I think you're going to enjoy this interview. I think you should definitely all go out and check out this book. So without any further ado, here's the interview. And my guests today are responsible for producing audio versions of some excellent stories and some first-run stories. I am, of course, speaking about the highly anticipated Escape Pod Anthology. With me are Alistair Stewart, Marguerite Kenner, the instigators behind Escape Artists, Mer Lafferty, and SB Divya, the editors and polishers of the shiny that is Escape Pod. And full disclosure, audio producer, tech staff, general technical raconteur. So yes, I play in the Escape Pod pond, and I'm happy to do so. Hello, everyone.
Hi.
Happy summer.
I think we need to get you business cards that say all around technological raconteur.
Technological raconteur is an excellent
That's
business
a great
card
title.
I agree completely.
Yeah, I'm all for that.
I have been an instigator, raconteur, a tech ninja for way, way too long, and it's been a long time since I've had a cool business card, so you may have talked me into that.
Marguerite's writing stuff down, and once you write stuff down, nothing escapes the lists. I think this is happening.
Cool. So this anthology has been a labor of love for how long? And Titan Books just came out with it. We're, you know, November or October, depending on what part of the world you're with.
That's right.
And it is a delight. I've always loved science fiction short stories, and Escape Pod has been one that I've come back to again and again over the years. And being more involved with it the past couple of years has been even more fun. But where did the idea for the book come from?
I think it was actually Titan's idea, if I remember correctly. We had been, I think Mer and I talked to George, the
George
Titan,
Sanderson.
Yeah, George Sanderson, the Titan producer of the book, in Dublin at Worldcon. George was looking to kind of spread out the anthology range that Titan was offering. And Alistair and George were compatriots from way back. And so he approached us and said, you know, I really want to do more about getting audio fiction into traditional print. What do you think? And we said, well, you have excellent timing because EA's podcasts are about to hit a run of significant anniversaries. Escape Pod turned 15 this year, and then Pseudopod will follow, and Podcastle will follow the year after that. So the logical place to start was an anthology, of course, and we kind of discussed the idea with George, and we discussed the idea and brought it to Mer and Divya, who were very enthusiastic about it. And okay, I'm holding it up for the video. You can't see it in audio, obviously, but here it is. Ta-da!
So I'm going to guess, you can correct me if I'm wrong, that Divya and Mer were the selectors of which stories went into that book. What were the gems that you were looking for, that you were hoping to represent this anthology?
Well, it's we had to balance between reprints and originals, and we wanted most of the reprints to be from Escape Pod. And one of the things I'm most proud of Escape Pod is how we've been going on for so long that a lot of the really hot voices in science fiction right now were getting published by us in, you know, 2005, 2006, 2007. And, you know, it's kind of difficult to contact someone like N.K. Jemisin right now and ask her for an original. But it was, you know, we've published her before, and we had the relationship, and were able to get a reprint from her. Debbie, you don't want to keep going?
Yeah, I think that covers sort of the thematic way that we were looking at a lot of these stories. And then the other thing that we were trying to consider was making it representative of what we feel the Escape Pod name and brand means to people and to our audience. So we wanted kind of a nice wide cross-section of our different authors, different types of stories. We couldn't necessarily control for the original fiction that people sent us, but we kind of knew what we would get from authors like Tim Pratt or Sarah Gailey. So we had some idea of what we were in for.
So how long did it take from the time that Titan dropped the flag and said, gimme, to you putting all of this together?
Yeah, I have to think about that. 6 months, maybe?
It was pretty. Yeah.
Maybe eight. It was pretty quick because I think we kind of agreed the concept at Worldcon, which was August-ish. And then I think you guys were soliciting authors before Christmas.
Yep.
And I remember us finishing everything up.
April?
April or so. And then the book was originally scheduled to be released in July, but then I love this story because this is our Thanks Obama story. Here in Europe, in the UK, where, well, we're in Europe for at least the next 20 days, where the book was due to be released first, everything in the publishing industry suffered very major setbacks, not just because of COVID-19, but because of printing capacity. And that is because the Obama memoir was being released. And so everybody we know in the genre space, ourselves included, had their books delayed by a couple of months. And it's the, thanks, Obama, you bumped all of our books. Yeah. So yeah, we were on track for a July release, but it actually wound up... was it July? Maybe October? But it got pushed back because of that.
Mm-hmm. I think July might have been the original, like, we would love to have it by July, and Titan was hoping to have it by July. And maybe the push to October was thanks COVID, and then the U.S. release getting pushed back an additional month was thanks Obama.
Yeah, I think you're right.
That has got to be still one of the funniest things I've ever seen. Everybody's publishing is on track, and then the souped up version of the Hulk walks into the room and says, paper mine.
Nice.
Actually, the flex there is a very stealthy one, because my understanding is it's volume one.
Oh, really? No.
Yes.
Oh, God.
I have seen it in person, and it is a big book.
Wow. I'm expecting it to show up under the tree, so that's good to know.
It's a doorstopper. Yeah. So volume one doorstopper is pretty impressive. But, you know, I guess he's effectively retired now, so he gets to sit around and write books. And he's very eloquent, so go for it, Obama.
Yay.
Seriously.
There are like 15 jokes I could make here about authors and isolated cabins and finishing books and deadlines. You know what? I'm not going to make any of them because you're a very, very well-trained, highly educated audience and you're making them all yourself.
I was going to make a joke about Stephen King and editors, but I won't.
Involving so, eloquent silence, exactly. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Polite laugh, golf clap.
So science fiction. Let us talk about what drew each of you into writing / publishing / swimming in science fiction. Because the passion you have for that genre, even the subgenres, the AI, the robotics, the space opera, the dystopian, it comes through in the stories you've selected, in the way you care about how these stories are recorded for the podcast, and that love is nurtured over time. At least I think it is. So what? How did you come to play in this sandbox?
When I was a kid, I was a voracious reader, but nothing ever made me want to tell stories until I read science fiction. So books about, you know, kids having adventures in the real world, that's great for other people to tell, but it didn't spark my interest as a creator. And then when I started reading science fiction and fantasy as a teen, I thought, now this is where I want to play. This is what I want to do. So ever since I was pretty young, I just have always wanted to be in a world different than this because it's much more exciting. Also, you can punch your problems a lot easier. Not that we do that a lot in this anthology. I'm just saying, more often than not, you can punch your problems in science fiction and fantasy, which is satisfying and violent. But, you know, that's what makes it story, not real. Mm-hmm. You go, Divya. I'm talking too much.
Cathartic. Yeah,
exactly. Cathartic, thank you.
Well, I, on the other hand, was an okay reader up through my single digits of childhood. And my dad was getting really frustrated that I was not reading at my level, except for assigned school books. And apparently he had a conversation with a colleague at UCLA who suggested that I might like science fiction. So he came home one day and was like, you should try reading science fiction. And I did like the 9-year-old face and was like, my dad's not going to stop bugging me about this till I read a science fiction book. So at school, I went to the school librarian and I was like, I need a science fiction book. And she handed me a book and I took it home expecting like little green aliens or something. And instead it was this wonderful story about a girl who had to leave Earth in a bit of a rush and move. And I had recently moved to LA from Ann Arbor, Michigan, and was very sad about it. And this book spoke to me. And then it had this amazing twist at the end and I was blown away. And so I went back to the library and was like, please, can I have some more science fiction? Like, this is the coolest thing I have ever read. And it was pretty much nonstop after that. She did give me The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe at some point, and I did not care for it and decided fantasy was dumb and awful till I was about 14. I have, you know, repented my ways somewhat in terms of genre and subgenre there, but speculative fiction has been my companion ever since then. I moved around a lot even after that, for various reasons. And so when I had no friends, when I was new to school, books were my friends and science fiction was my best friend of all. And eventually it inspired me to go into science for real.
Excellent. That's such a great story it about really the is. Power of school librarians.
Also, too. What was the book?
Right. Oh, the book was The Green Book by Jill Patton Walsh, which I found again about 5 years ago on Amazon. And so I have a copy now.
Oh, yay.
Nice.
I was a ridiculously voracious reader. And one of my uncles was a huge science fiction fan and was the one who would kind of fostered my love for it. And so I read Heinlein and Niven and Pratchett, which I didn't care for. But the kind of the genre reading that really cemented my love for it was Zelazny and the Amber books, which are very, these days we'd probably describe it as liminal or slipstream because it takes peanut butter and chocolate and gleefully mashes them all together. And it's always been kind of how I made a distinction between reading for productivity or work, because I'm in a very reading heavy profession and I'm overqualified because I like academia, and genre is my way of going, well, this isn't real, so therefore this is for fun. So I can just read it for candy and enjoy it and kind of go on with myself. But I literally can't, and my mom is a Trekkie. And I am a second generation Trekkie. And so science fiction has always been like the cornerstone of entertainment in my childhood and my household. So I literally can't remember a time when there was not science fiction in my life. It's just that thing that I love that asks what if and asks all the big questions.
I have successfully infiltrated spaces which they look like I should be in from a very, very early age. I was a very big kid. I was about six foot by the time I was 12. I looked 15 by the time I was 13. So I was able to get into 15 and 18 certificate movies really easily. I was able to rent 15 and 18 certificate videos. And the way that I refer to this is I encountered a lot of culture that damaged me in the best possible way at the best possible time. And this really started with 2010 by Arthur C. Clarke, which I read when I was put in hospital for a remarkably stupid reason, aged 11. And the children's ward on the tiny, tiny island that I grew up on had a copy of 2010 and the complete run of the Marv Wolfman, George Perez Teen Titans comics.
Nice.
Which would buy someone's house these days if they were still in good condition. And I read all of it, and I never really looked back. And science fiction for a very long time was my default refuge because it was where the clever people were. And I've struggled my whole life with the dichotomy between the fact that I'm 6 foot two and built like a door, and also I have a brain. And as a cishet white guy, if you're built this size, people assume you like rugby, farting, and falling over. I've played rugby. I have fallen over a few times. I'm pleading the fifth on the third. But I like thinking. I like stories which are about things. And for a long time, science fiction was absolutely that. It still is to a tremendous extent. The interesting side effect with me was for years I would go, oh, no, I'm a science fiction guy. I like spaceships. And then a few years ago, I realized that almost all the spaceships I like are made out of some weird biomechanical system or have been run by a corporation and deliberately flown past a planet or are haunted. And that I am actually a horror guy wearing a science fiction spacesuit. And that's my niche. That's what I love, which is why I love hosting Pseudopod, a horror show, so much. And at the same time, I love SF and all horror as much as I do.
And which is why whenever you talk to Johnny Sims, the two of you immediately start talking about things like Event Horizon.
It's the feel-good hit of the summer.
Oh, we are going to have a discussion about Event Horizon, and I hope I don't burn off all the rest of your hair. Anyway, that's for later.
Excellent.
Oh. 2 for 2 on that movie. It's getting a lot of traction this year.
Nice, nice. But I have always been a science fiction fan. I can't even remember what the real first science fiction story I read. I just remember running out of horse and dog adventure stories in the kids section and then coming across this series of books called Space Cat. And it literally was a cat wearing one of those bubble space helmets. I cannot remember a single detail about those stories other than somehow I got from Space Cat to Pern's Dragons and I never looked back. Mm-hmm. But this anthology has been a delight. And if you could say one thing, you know, to that properly masked stranger in the bookstore to suggest to them this book, what would it be?
One of the things that I find really, really powerful about the anthology is Sarah Ely's introduction.
Yes.
And I think it was really generous and a fantastic homage of Myrrh and Divya to reach out to Sarah to ask her to write that, because she gives such this wonderful lens of the personal history of Escape Pod and how it has been a thing that has evolved and changed and I would argue become a cornerstone of our particular little niche of the world. There are lots of short fiction publications, but there aren't many other short fiction publications that try for the art that is audio, which is the right presentation, mm-hmm. the right pairing, and it gives literal voice to the musical is the word I would use, but you know, the form of prose which hits the ear in a different way than it encounters the eye. And I think that just really contributes not only to the accessibility and the diversity of our field, of our chosen passion, but of just fiction in general. And I think especially over the last like 5 or almost 10 years now, where genre has started to really embrace and bring poetry into the fold, and how so much of poetry is about spoken and how it's presented to people. I think audio fiction has only benefited from having that kind of comrade in arms about how, yes, science fiction is about spaceships and what if stories, but it's also about the art of storytelling and how we're getting a lot more comfortable with the many, many different ways that we do that.
Mm-hmm. Divya, Murr, how about you?
I would probably say something shorter, mostly borrowed from some feedback I've already seen, comments from people who've gotten the anthology that really surprised me, which is, if you like science fiction, you should check out this anthology, which has 15 short stories in it, because if you like these 15 short stories, there are 750 more for you to go and enjoy for free at escapepod.org.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I assumed when we put this anthology out that it was more commemorative than anything, and that it would mostly be our existing fans who would go out and buy it to have sort of a physical memento, right? Because if you're listening to a podcast, you don't have anything to put on your shelf or hold in your hands. So here's the print anthology. What's that?
Or get anything signed.
Or getting signed, yeah, which unfortunately is not going to happen this year anyway, but maybe someday, right?
Yeah.
And I've been really pleasantly surprised by reviewers and just random people on the internet who've bought the anthology and said they have never heard of Escape Pod. They have never listened to a single one of our stories. They picked up this anthology for whatever reason and loved it. And then they went on to discover that, oh gosh, there's this whole wide world yet to be mined and enjoyed by them.
There's a one thing I'm proudest of is we managed to hit a lot of different emotional beats in this anthology. If you want ridiculous humor, it's there. If you want humor to make you think, it's there. If you want something darker and sobering, not darker, it's more sobering and serious, it's there. If you want a very serious, decorated author telling a very funny story from early in their career, it's there. Actually, two of those, at least, that I can think of immediately. If you want new authors, there's a couple in there. There will probably be, almost everybody will probably find a story they don't like, but I really doubt it if you're a science fiction fan and you can't find one that you absolutely love, because there's just, it's a good spectrum, and I'm very proud of that part.
Yeah. I mean, in typical boss fashion, the best possible thing I can do at this point is point at everybody else and go, yeah, all of that. The one other thing I'd like to add is this, like everybody who's had a book out this year, this has been really hard for very obvious reasons. And one of the things with my journalist head on at the moment I'm working on is a discussion of where personal ethics lie at the end of a COVID year. How do you separate art from artist? What do you put down? What don't you put down? And there's been a lot of discussion as we're recording this of the issues with a couple of members of the Mandalorians cast. And there's a lot of people who are, I feel quite rightly, pointing out that there's nowhere near enough discussion of that compared to all the very understandable squeeing about how great the Mandalorian is. So that's really the nub of it, the idea of what art do you choose to engage with and what art do you choose to use to escape. And that's where we come in, because it's not called Escape Pod by accident. This is a show that was designed to give you something good to listen to on your commute. And the very notion of a commute, the very nature of it, has changed radically for so many people now. But the need to step away from the world for half an hour has never been more urgent and never been more focused than it has been in this, the year of our Lord Keanu 2020. And I can't think of a better place to stand and a better group of people to stand with than at the end of this, for so many people, horrifying year, being able to go, hey, we got you. Mm. 15 stories. Come take a ride.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, and I have to also tip my hat because of what was said about the lyrical nature of audio fiction. This, I've always been a fan of audio short stories, of audio books, but even hearing the stories that Al and Murr and Divya have narrated over the years, there is a little piece of magic that goes into how some of those stories come across, because there's, for me, there's nothing more satisfying for that moment where you stop your brain and that person's voice telling you the story is all you hear. And that connects for me deeply with the emotions of whatever the character is going through. And I love that this happens on this podcast every week.
I think this, but now is also an especially good time that kind of cultural consumers in general are having that discussion as well. We're at the point where video games and digital environments are nearly indistinguishable from reality in a lot of ways. And I know, at least among voice actors, there's a whole lot of discussion right now about, okay, well, you can use an AI to read a voice, but is that my voice? That's not my performance. And I think there's a lot of scope and maybe more appreciation, or at least awareness, for the art of vocal presentation these days, probably more than there ever has been. And so you listen to stories, and you know there are a lot of different fiction podcasts out there, and some of them, like us, spend a lot of time and effort in their pairings, and some of them are small outfits where it's just one person reading every type of story, and that's a different type of engagement. And then there are, of course, fantastically produced full cast audio dramas these days. So there's this huge wide spectrum of how you can engage with story and voice and presentation, like there really hasn't been before. But I mean, audio fiction technically isn't new. I mean, that's what radio plays were. That's what campfire stories are. It's probably some of the oldest and first engagement that we have with fiction is being told stories or read to as children. There's a really deep connection with a person who is telling me something that comes in my ears.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I would say that goes back even further to ancient history. In India, right where I'm from, it was all oral tradition for thousands of years. All knowledge, not just fiction, but storytelling and mythology was a huge part of that. And, you know, your teacher talked to you and told you these things, and you passed them on to your children and your family and the next generation and so on. So I think we are, as human beings, very attuned to listening to someone speak to us, right from the womb, when your mother's voice gets soaked into your consciousness, to your last days when you want someone nearby, and if nothing else, you can hear them speak and whisper in your ear.
And it's starting to lead to some really fascinating new forms. The rediscovery of serialized documentary, which has taken place across podcasting since about 2014, is something which has been fascinating to see. The obvious joke here is how Serial invented podcasting in 2014. You know, folks like B7 Media, whose 10-part show The Space Race is part fictionalized future of space exploration and part dramatized history of space exploration. And it plays like nothing else on Earth. There's a podcast I got sent this week called In Strange Woods, which is a true crime podcast that's also fictional, that's also a horror story, and that's also a musical. And there is a moment about 3 minutes in where the first song hits, and for about 3 seconds you're like, I do not have the tools to process what this is. And then everything clicks and it just soars.
Mm.
Audio is magic, and it's it changes shape all the time. And it's such an exciting field to be in as a result.
Yeah.
I had another point as well, but I didn't want to interrupt, and I wanted to give Mer a chance to speak also.
No, I just wanted to remind Alistair that another thing that was nonfiction is Santa Claus Conquers the Martians. But I'm sorry.
At least the first 15 minutes of it twice.
I saw it today. It's listed as nonfiction on Amazon Prime.
Winkle Bean hiding in the radar box.
Yeah. We had a rather disastrous viewing of it today. It was.
Oh, no.
It was painful. We didn't even get through it the whole way. We did see the first 15 minutes twice. And they're still my friends. You know, I'm really grateful. But to go a little bit off of that on an idea of accessibility, one thing I'm really proud of is when we started buying the rights to print the whole stories on our websites, because we wanted to accept the fact that not everybody was going to be able to listen. Mm-hmm. And while we are still a primarily an audio market, and Divi and I always have that in mind when we read stories, we have to remember, how is this going to sound in audio? And, you know, there are a couple that we've regretfully had to turn down because we didn't think it would translate well to audio. At least for, I'm sorry, the years they blur together, especially in 2020, but for the past several years, we've purchased the rights. So if you are not able to hear it, or you know somebody who loves science fiction and unable to hear it, that we also do have the text at our website. So we've tried to branch out to be a little bit more accessible, and I'm pretty happy about that.
And that also segues beautifully onto the point I was actually going to make, which was one of the most common pieces of feedback we get from our audience, not just with Escape Pod, but across EA, is we will frequently get thank you messages from people for whom English is not their first language, that we do in fact publish the text of the story in parallel with the audio, because they literally tell us these stories about how that's how I practice my English, is I hear how you say the words and then I follow the words at the same time. And we're starting now to get to the point where we want to do a little more interaction with education for exactly that point, because we've had educators tell us, I teach ESL classes, I love being able to send my students to, you know, go read this and listen to this, and you know, it helps with their interaction, which is again just another one of those accessibility features, that being able to publish simultaneously in both text and audio really, really helps with.
Yes, this book, this project, this project of love, passion project, mission to save Earth from itself. Yes, I'm going poetic. But Escape Pod has been an anchor for a long time, and I hope it continues to be for a long time to come. The website is escapepod.org. The book can be found at your favorite retailers in various formats. And I know several other people here have other projects to signal boost. Why don't you go ahead and tell us where we can find those, Divya?
All right. You can find all of my fiction and related projects on my website, sbdivya.com. You can follow me on Twitter as @DivyasTweets. And I would love for you to check out my first novel, which is coming out at the beginning of March, called Machinehood. And you can get a little taste of it at machinehood.com.
Nice. With a starred review, I do believe. Excellent.
Mer?
I am in a weird between projects. I'm doing lots of writing and not a lot of putting stuff out right now, but I am doing streaming frequently on Twitch. So if you want to see my stuff live, I'm at twitch.tv/mightymur. And if you want to get most of what I put out via podcast, you can go to murverse.com, and you can see my older books there as well. I hopefully have, I have two projects I'm working on now. Neither has been terribly advertised, and neither has a title. So hopefully next year I can announce some stuff and you know, start banging the drum, but not right now. I'm head down and writing.
I have a weekly pop culture newsletter called The Full Lid, which publishes 5 p.m. GMT every Friday, with one sole aim, which is to give you something in your inbox, which is good. It's basically me being enthusiastic about bits of pop culture I've encountered across the course of the last week.
I'm sorry, you're award-nominated?
My award-nominated. As we record this, it is a finalist for the British Fantasy Award.
Nice.
Thank you. Pop culture newsletter, The Full Lid. This week we have all sorts of stuff, including hopefully our first competition. This is our last issue before the end of the year, and we're back first week of January. There's also a paid supplement to it called Full Lid Plus, which covers some Disney Plus material, and also is possibly about to start covering some other things too.
And then the other thing we're doing, in addition to keeping everything, you know, upright and flying at EA, is we are also streaming usually twice a week. On Sunday mornings, we do a couple of chill hours of indie casual games. So right now we're playing The Last Campfire, which is nice. And then on Wednesday nights, we have what we call the Bedtime Stories series, which is usually Alistair doing audio fiction reading. Right now, we are in the middle of A Christmas Carol. We're about to do the third stave, and that'll be the five Wednesdays in December. And then we started experimenting with, and we're getting more regularized with, having guests. So Mur and Divya were a guest on the show. We interviewed Ursula Vernon, Teen Kingfisher, after we finished her fantastic A Wizard's Guide to Defensive Baking. And then we had Jonathan Sims, the writer of the Magnus Archives, with his debut horror novel, 13 Stories, a couple weeks ago as well. So,
and we have lots of guests lining up.
I am lining up many, many guests, yes, for the first half of 2021.
I recommend Alistair's reading of A Christmas Carol because his British accents are just on point.
We have so a content good. Warning for accents in the story because there was a fear he was going to try to do all the Muppets at one
time. Oh, dear.
If nothing else, there is. Watch the first stave for the moment where I successfully corpse Marguerite.
There was a glorious clip of him busting into a carol at one point that laid me flat.
My Cockney urchin is powerful and not to be underestimated.
Well, since you are a fan of horror, have you ever sung the Carol of the Old Ones?
Oh, see, I couldn't fit that in without busting up. That would be great, though. I mean, when Marguerite and I first got together, it was Christmas, and she introduced me to the HPLHS carols. So quite regularly, the phrase "it's beginning to look a lot like fishmen" does echo through this house.
Yeah, exactly.
Excellent.
We were actually listening to that today in the car.
Nice.
Okay. I'm just about ready for it. I have to warm up for it, but then when they do the O Cthulhu Hallelujah chorus in four-part harmony, that makes me very happy.
Yes.
I like that a lot.
Yes, it's delightful. Oh, everyone, thank you so much for sharing
your
passion for Escape Pod here. And we will have links to everything and everyone's side hustles.
Thanks so much for having us, Summer.
Thanks, Summer.
Thanks, Summer.
Lovely.
Slice of Sci-Fi.
Hey, you. Stop hiding behind that sofa. Come out from back there. Your sofa wants to talk to you. Wants to play footsie with your mind. Listen to it. Relax. Let it in. Starship Sofa, the first podcast ever to win a Hugo Award, with weekly stories from the world's best authors, Michael Moorcock, Peter Watts, Joe Haldeman, Peter F. Hamilton, and many, many, many more, with news and reviews and interviews. Bradbury, Pole, Wolf, and Mieville, the sofas chewed the fat with them all. Facts and fictions, articles and particles. Oh, why aren't you listening? StarshipSofa.com. Your best science fictional fix this side of the coffee table.
This is Kevin Murphy from Mystery Science Theater 3000 and Riff Tracks, and you have bitten off a nice big chunk of Slice of Sci-Fi.
And yes, you can go get your copy of Escape Pod, the science fiction anthology, from your favorite book retailers, be it Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Bookshop, IndieBound, I think is the other one where you can hook up with independent booksellers and obtain yourself a copy. We will have links for Bookshop and Amazon. So indulge there and send us a couple of pennies along the way. It amazes and pleases me that so many people have listened to both Slice of Sci-Fi and Escape Pod for now going on 16 years. Slice of Sci-Fi will be 16 in March, and Escape Pod will be 16 in May. And those are not milestones to sneeze at. Those are a lot of people putting in a lot of work to put out entertainment for fans who enjoy what is being done with the podcast, with the interviews, with the stories. And I feel a little bit humbled to be involved with both of them. Full disclosure, I am an audio producer for Escape Pod, as well as a new staff member for Escape Artists. So who knows where that can lead? Nowhere but up, in my opinion. Looking forward to the rest of 2021. Got more comic creators, more speculative fiction, genre-adjacent type books coming along. More that are related to media tie-ins, stuff like Star Wars, various popular comics. We're going to traipse down that road a little bit. As for balancing the horror content and the science fiction content, I do what I can. Some people have made it known that they are not huge fans of the plethora of horror content that's been on the site the past few years. I do my best whenever I find a science fiction movie out there, independent, I jump on it as fast as I can. And if it's really, really good, I will signal boost the hell out of it. If it's just okay, I will still talk about it and let you know that it's out there. For instance, Skylines, the third Skylines movie, not bad. It keeps pace with the first two that are out there, Skyline and Beyond Skyline, and it's fun. And as a few DS9 friends of mine pointed out, hey, it's Alexander Siddig, let's go. So, and the movie I covered at the end of the year, Parallel, oh my, that is a delightful little science fiction, time travel, parallel worlds paradox with a thriller twist to it. If you can go see Parallel, directed by Isaac Esbon, go see it immediately. What's another one? Synchronic by Benson and Moorhead, which you should go see. Stars Anthony Mackie and Jamie Dornan. Go see it. It's a slow burn, but it is entertaining. It is very entertaining. And there are rumors about new projects coming down the pipe for Benson and Moorhead. So keep an eye out for that, because anything they do, I want to see. If I remember correctly, The Endless, which is one of their earlier movies, is still on Netflix. Go check that out. But if you have questions or comments or opinions to share about the balance of science fiction versus horror coverage here, let me know. Feel free to send me an email, summer@sliceofscifi.com. Leave comments on the website, sliceofscifi.com. There are, reach out to me on Twitter. @sliceofscifi. I'm @sliceofscifi on Twitter. And yes, I do engage in conversations about all sorts of fun stuff. Come on by the website. Comment on any of the reviews. Comment on any of the interviews. I do engage. I want to hear from the listeners, both new and long-time supporters and fans. You guys are why I keep doing this show. I take a guess at what you want to hear, because you've been listening this long. I hope the stuff I like is also the stuff you may like too. Yeah, who else is looking forward to more Witcher? Woohoo, right here. And we'll go with that. If you are currently supporting the podcast efforts here and at the other shows, thank you. Thank you so much. Your donations, your pledges help support sliceofscifi.com, writersafterdark.com, babylonpodcast.com, charliejade.net, all the old shows, they're still out there. And yes, I'm still cleaning them up. And they're there for you to still enjoy, for you to point other people to so they can enjoy. And if you want to add your support, the place to go is patreon.com/sliceofscifi. And if a monthly pledge is not something you want to commit to, but you still want to help out, the link to use would be paypal.me/scifisummer. I want to thank and congratulate all the people who participated in the 2020 is almost done series of giveaways. A lot of people will start receiving their prizes this week. There were a couple of unclaimed items, so I'll have to figure out something else to do with those. Never fear. It will be a while before I run out of stuff to give away to you guys. And that reminds me, I need to contact the January Patreon perk winner and see what they want for their prize, their perk this month. But that will do it for this episode. Thank you all for listening. We'll be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi next week. Take care.